the next case, which is Patton against MFS Sun Life Financial. Mr. Groth.
Good morning, Your Honors, opposing counsel. My name is William Groth. I'm here this morning representing the appellant, Michael Patton. In de novo review in an ERISA disability benefits case means that a court must determine whether the plan administrator's decision to deny, or in this case to suspend benefits already awarded, was not simply a reasonable decision, but was correct. Under this court's decision in Casey versus Udaholm, the proper means to...
Is the issue whether the... Whether what the insurance company can conclude from the evidence that it knows, or is it a question of what the insured has to present to the insurance company to prove disability?
Well, I think it depends on
whether... It seems to me here the insurance company really doesn't have enough evidence to know whether this guy is disabled or not, but on the other hand, the insured person is not presented enough evidence to demonstrate disability.
Well, I would respectfully disagree. I think, Your Honor, Mr. Patton's treating physician, who is a specialist, Dr. Ambrose, submitted reports in which he very clearly said that Mr. Patton was no longer able to perform the essential and material duties of his occupation, which was that of an overland truck driver, that he had repetitive lifting restrictions, couldn't lift over 25 pounds, he couldn't sit with his knees flexed for over 1 hour at a time, he was currently in need of vocational rehabilitation training in order to find another career that wouldn't be so stressful on his knee joint. Now, there's no question that there is some confusion in the record, in the administrative record, because of a less definitive report that Dr. Ambrose subsequently submitted. But that confusion,
I... Less definitive. I mean, whether it was a mistake or not is a different question. But Dr. Ambrose actually said, it's in his own handwriting, said Mr. Patton had been released without restriction. And I would say combining that statement with the fact that the kind of job training he was doing was to be an EMT, which is a demanding job. And I know you're making a distinction between training and actually doing the job, but the truth is, in training, sooner or later you do the things that you're going to have to do in the job or you haven't been trained. So, you know, carrying heavy people around or whatever it is you do as an EMT is certainly part of the training. So there is a moment in time where the insurance company sees both a statement from the doctor that he's released without restriction and the fact that the job he's training for seems to have physical requirements very like that of a truck driver. Then maybe for you the next thing happens is there's a later moment in time where Dr. Ambrose writes back again and says, sorry, I really meant it's permanent restriction. But does he get to create the issue of fact for summary judgment by inconsistent statements from his own doctor?
No, I think the issue of fact, the material issue of fact that's created is the difference in opinion between Dr. Foster, who was just the consultative physician who never examined Mr. Patton, and Dr. Ambrose's opinions, both the first opinion where he very clearly said this gentleman is in need of vocational rehabilitation, and then the May 12, 2004 report that was submitted along with the administrative appeal, where he clarified any ambiguity in his intervening statement, the released without restriction statement, and made it very clear that this gentleman had permanent restrictions. He's not able to depress a clutch and drive a tractor-trailer rig.
But by what rule of law was the district court required to accept the May 12, 2004 letter from Dr. Ambrose over what you allege to be the mistaken statement earlier?
Yeah. Well, first, it's de novo review. Secondly, the court needs to...
How do we pick, you know, which one?
Mm-hmm. The court needs to look at the entire record, not just isolated pieces of it, and the court has to draw all inferences in favor of Mr. Patton, the non-moving party.
Well, you would have a very compelling case if Dr. Ambrose had been consistent all along. Suppose he'd always said, permanent restriction, but I think it's fine for him to train to be an EMT. And then Dr. Foster had been brought in and had said, I just don't read the record that way. If you can be an EMT, you can be a truck driver. And the insurance company decided to go with Foster. At that point, certainly, it looks like there's conflicting medical evidence in the record. You can't resolve that on summary judgment. But your record is messier because of this slip of the... And it's not even like a box. He actually writes it out in his handwriting.
Well, we assume it's his handwriting. I don't know.
Somebody writes it out.
I mean, as one who deals with physicians quite frequently in these kinds of cases, I know that physicians are very busy people, and they do make mistakes. And I think that's what happened.
I'd like to admit that.
And I think this court has said earlier this year in Davis versus Unum that doctors are not required to express opinions in the same degree of detail and clarity that we lawyers are required to present in our briefs to this court. So, again, we're drawing inferences. We're drawing inferences against Mr. Patton, or at least the district court did. The district court drew an inference that we had somehow gotten Dr. Ambrose to recant an earlier opinion. That suggests that there is some sort of deliberate distortion by Dr. Ambrose, and that is simply not borne out by looking at the entirety of the record. And the district court also drew an adverse inference that somehow because Mr. Patton was training to become a paramedic, that he was going to work someday as a paramedic.
But don't you think that was, even as I said, even the training program, when you train to be something, you do that thing which you are hoping to do on your own.
Again, that's drawing an inference. We tried to submit evidence to the district court, which the district court did not accept, that showed that Mr. Patton's training consisted, up to that point, solely of sedentary classroom work. He was acquiring information and knowledge that would have been useful to him in other careers in the medical profession, not necessarily as an EMT or a paramedic. He had other career options. I'm sorry.
Is there in your proffer?
That's in the affidavit that we submitted to the court.
The court didn't want, yeah.
Yes, that the court did not consider. I believe my time is up.
Rebuttal time, if you'd like to save it. Mr. Schmidtke?
May it please the court, my name is Mark Schmidtke, and I'm here today representing the Appalee Sun Life Assurance Company of Canada. The burden of proof is on Mr. Patton. That's very clear under the policy. He's required to show that he's disabled, that he meets the requirements for benefits under the policy, not only initially, but in an ongoing fashion.
Well, how does that fit in with the de novo standard?
The district judge, under a de novo standard, reviews the determination in this case that Mr. Patton did not satisfy his burden to determine whether that determination was correct or not correct, based in this case on the administrative record. And that's what Judge McKinney did. And to some extent, he has to, and it's very common in summary judgment proceeding, make some qualitative determination about the evidence. That is to say, is there a reasonable issue of fact that would go to the fact finder? Now, one of the ironies, of course, in these ERISA cases is that Judge McKinney will be the fact finder, or would be the fact finder, because these cases are tried to the bench, not to a jury. But in any event, the only proposed disputed issue of fact that the plaintiff submitted was the May 2004 letter from Dr. Ambrose.
And if we give that letter, I mean, taking the summary judgment standard seriously, it looks to me like there's some evidence in the record that says that Mr. Patton is indeed permanently restricted in ways that would preclude him from his prior job and similar jobs, and that right now there's no reason in this record to assume that the EMT job is the equivalent. There are just disputes about that.
I think it's very clear and undisputed that the EMT job is a tougher job than driving a truck.
He didn't have it yet.
Well, he was training to do it.
Yeah,
and there's Dr. Ambrose at no point. Dr. Ambrose specifically released him and knew he was training to be an EMT. At no point did Dr. Ambrose say, I'm only releasing him to train, not to work.
We don't even know if Dr. Ambrose considered the requirements of an EMT, though.
He was presented them twice. He was presented those requirements by the vocational person who raised the issue the first time.
Well, that's not my problem. I'm not discharging him to be an EMT. I'm just saying whether he can drive a truck.
He further may have thought, let's cross that bridge when we come to it. You know, if he trains for 2 years to be an EMT and then goes and applies someplace, at that point, Dr. Ambrose may say, you know what, it's knowledge you've gained, but I don't think your knee can take it. We don't know.
Dr. Ambrose never says any of that. And it's the plaintiff's burden to prove that he's disabled. He can't prove under the contract or in court that he's disabled based on an unclear record. He's the one who's got to meet that burden. The best you could say for plaintiff's case is that he muddied the record. That doesn't get him there. That doesn't get him even close.
See, son, as soon as they got this letter that said I released him without restriction, they glommed onto that and they said, that's it. We're going to cut him off.
It's right? More than that, Your
isn't
Honor.
Isn't that what happened here?
No, because you've got to look at the history. It's more than that, Your Honor.
Okay.
What happened here is Sun Life is presented by the vocational person with a patent inconsistency in Dr. Ambrose's release. He releases him to do a job that's much more physically demanding than driving a truck. If you look even at Dr. Ambrose's original restrictions, which may be permanent, maybe not, they're not that far off of the requirements for driving a truck as reported by this employer. So what happens? Sun Life, first the vocational person brings the inconsistency to Dr. Ambrose. Dr. Ambrose apparently did not respond, at least it's not in our record.
Blankenship you're talking
about? Yes. The vocational person.
See, I get back to my original question. If you charge the doubts here to Mr. Pat, say, you know, he's responsible if the evidence is doubtful. He hasn't done a very good job of presenting his claim, so we can hold against him on summary judgment. If that's the law, that's one thing. But if this is just a question of who's right and who's wrong, can this fellow drive a truck or can he drive a truck, then I think you may have a different answer.
The question is definitely the burden of proof is on Mr. Patton. That's very clear
in
the contract.
I must say, I'm not sure whether this fella can drive a truck or not.
The
insurance company doctor just said, well, we're never going to know if he can drive a truck until he drives a truck and we find out, you know, something to that effect. We're never sure about these things.
Dr. Foster was consulted after Dr. Ambrose reported to Sun Life that he had released Mr. Patton without restrictions. And in that letter, which is a very thorough letter, Sun Life laid out the inconsistency between release to do an EMT job and a release to do a truck driver job, or non-release as the case may be. Sun Life had previously asked Dr. Ambrose for updated restrictions. He sent an old office note. So Sun Life specifically said to him, you sent us an old office note in April of 03. It's now September 03. Please tell us, does that represent his current restrictions? And Dr. Ambrose didn't respond at first. In fact, he got a couple of reminder letters. It took him about 6 months to respond to that letter. When he does, he says, no, that does not represent his current restrictions. And Sun Life specifically asked him, what are those current restrictions? And he says, released without restrictions in May of 03. It's very clear. This is not just some general one, you know, on a notepad or a prescription pad saying he can't work or he's been released. This is a response to some very specific questions. And then when the claim is denied, Mr. Patton comes back with a cryptic letter from Dr. Ambrose that raises for the first time his alleged inability to use a clutch on a truck, which has never been presented. It's nowhere else in the record. And there's no evidence or discussion of why all of a sudden that's a restriction. Nor does he ever say that his earlier opinion was a mistake.
But isn't it logical, though, taking the facts favorably to Mr. Patton, that he goes back to Dr. Ambrose and says, look, the company needs something much more specific from you. Please say something about my ability to depress and release a mechanical clutch on a tractor-trailer rig. That's what you were asking for, isn't it? Something particularized.
We asked earlier, and Dr. Ambrose said he was released without restrictions.
And now Dr. Ambrose is saying that's not what I meant. I mean, I don't know why you have to assume Dr. Ambrose is some cat's paw for Mr. Patton.
I don't know what he is. I mean, it's not unusual for a treating physician to want to support the patient. I don't know what that conversation was.
That's a factual issue, surely.
No, not in this case. Not when that letter has no basis on the record, no basis in underlying fact, doesn't state anything. Nowhere does Dr. Ambrose say, my previous opinion was a mistake. Nowhere does he say, I was thinking about a different patient. I should have looked back at my records. He doesn't have any explanation at all. He just comes in with an opinion that's dead against what he had said earlier in response to a very specific letter. Sun Life wanted to know. Sun Life asked very specific questions, and he responded very specifically. Judge McKinney had a right to determine whether that May 2004 letter was sufficient to create an issue of fact, and he determined it was not. And in part, it's because Mr. Patton had the burden of proof all along, and he can't meet his burden under the contract, and he can't meet his burden in court by making the record unclear. He's the one who's got to come forward. All of this affidavit he submits later in court, he could have submitted to Sun Life and never did. He could have submitted more information for Dr. Ambrose. He never did. With that, we request that Judge McKinney's summary judgment be affirmed.
Thank you. Mr. Grove?
I'd first like to point out, of course, that the record does not suggest that Dr. Ambrose released Mr. Patton to do a job that is paramedic. He released him to go back to study paramedic training. This is in his May 7, 2003 letter. This is something that Sun Life knew about, I think, within a month or so after they started paying him disability benefits. So that's a slight distortion of the record. Now, why did Mr. Patton enroll in training? He thought he had to because under Sun Life's policy, it says if we think you're a candidate for retraining and you don't enroll in that retraining course, we can cut off your benefits. So he thought he needed to do that. He thought he had to do it under the policy. He thought he was going to be rewarded for it under the policy, a 10% increase in his monthly benefits. And he didn't want to sit around. He wanted to try to do something to improve his life. I mean, this isn't a case where a guy goes out, says he's disabled, and is out, you know, playing rugby. This is a guy who's trying to improve his life. And then second guessed by Sun Life, claiming that this is somehow inconsistent. Well, there's no evidence in the record that this training was in any way inconsistent with his physical limitations that Dr. Ambrose assigned. This court itself has held that even working a job is not necessarily incompatible with the finding of disabled in the Hawkins case. I mean, desperate people sometimes do desperate things. They have to work. They have to earn an income to support their family. Does that mean they're not disabled? No. This court has made that clear. So if working is not incompatible with disability, and we're just talking about job-related disability, not total disability, then clearly, training. Sitting in a classroom at Ivy Tech to learn about medical issues is not incompatible with the claim that you can't work as a truck driver, constantly depressing a mechanical clutch and sitting for hours and hours behind the wheel.
Is that class transferable? There's some mention in the record about his potential interest in nursing as well. The topics were transferable?
Yes. Now that's not in the record. Because I will represent that, yeah, exactly. One of the career options or career paths would have been as an RN, and he knew that if he couldn't do the EMT work, that there would be other career paths that would be available to him if he got this training through Ivy Tech. Thank you very much.
We'll take the case under advisement.